our next presenter is not here, but he is joining us through his pre-recorded audio. And of course, I'm going to just take the opportunity to say how much we're missing Scott one more time and loving him and sending him so much love this morning as he is in and out of treatments and still listening in and enjoying our conventions. So he is going to talk with us about the settlement that we were able to reach with the Colorado Department of Corrections. And I think this is just a milestone settlement. I know that in a letter that we received as we were monitoring the results of the settlement, one of the prisoners said that he was able to participate in a drug and alcohol recovery education program for the first time. And that's really powerful. So whenever you guys are ready, you can let Scott roll.
Recording these remarks because, quite frankly, I never know what's going to be happening minute to minute here in the hospital. I'm supposed to be in a treatment, and sometimes there's a lot of commotion. The technician is asking me questions, adjusting this, adjusting that. And so even though I may be out there in Zoom land listening to this right now, I suspect that I'll be interrupted if I tried to do this live. So I thank you for your indulgence. Now, with respect to this prisoner case, the Mackus case, Brian Mackus and some other parties and the National Federation of the Blind of Colorado versus the Colorado Department of Corrections, I want to make a few sort of general remarks and then just talk about some of the details of the settlement. So let me first start with kind of a general point, because I think I've been asked this question a number of times, and I understand why. A number of NFP folks have approached me and said, well, why are we doing these prisoner cases? We did a major one in Maryland. We've done this one now in Colorado. Both reached wonderful settlements. And we're going to begin another one in another state that I can't tell you about because we're in the confidential phase of preparing litigation. And I have always tried to tell people these things, that if this was the only thing that our legal program did, I would agree with that. We shouldn't devote all of our resources to blind prisoner cases. It wouldn't make a lot of financial or resource allocation sense. However, I don't think the opposite is true either, that if we devoted absolutely zero to this kind of project, that it would make sense. Why do I say that? Well, the Americans with Disabilities Act guarantees all Americans equal opportunity under the law and access to programs, services, and modifications, accommodations, auxiliary aids, etc. And the Department of Corrections, both at the federal level, are covered, for example, by Section 504 and other laws, and the states are covered because it's part of Title II of the ADA, and it's a program or service that the state runs. It's also important because, you know, in our United States, we literally imprison millions of people. We have the highest per population pro rata share of prisoners in the world. Not only do we have the highest pro rata share, we actually have the highest just sheer number. I don't remember precisely what the numbers are. It's over 3 million, maybe it's 5 million. It's a lot of people, quite frankly. So obviously, in that population, that size of people, you would expect to find blind people. And blind people that are in prison should have whatever other opportunities other non-disabled sighted people have. For example, in this one case that you'll be hearing about, you'll be hearing about it, because even if we don't litigate it, we settle it first. You'll hear about it because it'll be a public settlement. But the point is, in this particular case, we know of at least dozens of blind prisoners that are facing barriers. And the idea of our prison system, of course, is to be punitive on one hand, to punish people for their crimes. But on the other hand, the purpose is to rehab people, to get them back into society. So if you're a blind person and you're young and dumb and are disadvantaged and don't make smart decisions and you screw up your life, you get caught, you get thrown in prison, you should have the same sort of opportunity to rehab yourself and to get out of there early as you can and get into a program. And you know, a lot of people do get back into the mainstream of life, including blind people. We have NFP members who have served time and have now for many, 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 many years lived, you know, normal lives or whatever. And so this is important that we do this. Also, I want to assure you that when we take on cases like this, we work with other organizations to help, one, defray some costs, but two, rely on their sort of prisoner or other expertise. In the case here in Colorado, we work with the Civil Rights Education and Enforcement Center, which does prisoner cases more broadly than disability. And it's similar in these other cases that we are or have been doing. So I wanted to give that explanation to you because I think it's important. Now, in our case, the issue is, how do Colorado blind prisoners access information and programs on an equal basis so that they can get time knocked off, so that they can get back into society? And the real answer to that, even though we settled another case many years ago that Julie Deaton did a lot of work on, and I served as an expert for, interestingly enough, it wasn't getting better. Blind people, especially as prisons shifted to more digital systems, just weren't getting information. If you don't get information, you can't participate in the education classes. You can't get access to the jobs in prison. That's a big deal in prison, because they earn a little bit of money that they, over time, they can use for some of their basic needs or little extras like candy or, you know, whatever. Or put aside so that when they come out, they have a little bit of cash. And they do labor. They do. They make things, you know, the license plates, the some garments, some whatevers. They do work, and they should get paid for that work, even though in kind of one sense of it's enforced labor. Well, it's not enforced. Nobody has to work, I guess, in the prison. But all the guys do, guys and gals. folks, they do, because, you know, they, the biggest thing people fight in prison is time and boredom, I think, some of them. And so if you're a blind person, I should have access to a job just like my cellmate or my neighbor or whoever. And so the, you know, a lot of these jobs have been inaccessible. They've either said, oh, well, we can't make the technology accessible, or it's dangerous, or whatever. The same thing with education programs. You couldn't access the books equally. You couldn't access information about your own rights, appeal rights in prison. And you would have to do, you would have to give confidential medical, other legal information, and that's another thing. Any sighted prisoner can go to the legal law library in the prisons and, you know, write their appeals and work with their lawyers. Blind prisoners were not able to do that. They had no access to the system. And so the only way you could do it is by working what with the volunteer prisoners who are, I can't remember the exact name, offender care assistants. Well, that's not reliable. First of all, you're giving a bunch of personal information to people who, some of them are great people, you know, no problem. But some, well, they're in prison for a reason. And so that was a bad situation. And sometimes our blind prisoners, in this case in particular, for example, would tell us, I wrote a letter to my attorney, but the OCA never sent it. Or he didn't write down what I meant. So giving independent private access to information like any other prisoner was a priority of this case. So essentially the settlement does this. It gives access to every kind of program, service that other prisoners have. For example, blind prisoners will be given laptops like sighted prisoners often are, or, you know, they're given pads, usually iPads or whatever. But they'll be given access to these laptops with JAWS on them or NVDA or whatever, and can read the regulations, can read information. The prison has agreed to purchase accessible books. The prison has agreed, not the prison, the Department of Corrections has agreed to offer, you know, education and employment programs on an equal basis and provide accommodations. There's so much in the settlement. It's a very long agreement, very detailed. It's an amazing piece of legal work. And it's all because of the NFB of Colorado and the NFB. We worked with Creek. Amy Robertson was the lead lawyer throughout from Creek. Eve Hill helped us on the NFB side. I was not technically a lawyer in the case because I was the party representative of the NFB of Colorado. But I did participate, you know, not, essentially as a lawyer because I have that knowledge too. And it was a wonderful settlement. And so we can be proud of the work that we did. So in just a couple of other things I want to say that I kind of find interesting. One of our main plaintiff, Brian Mackus, he's in prison for a long time. I think at least till 2046 is his sentence. And the reason he's in prison is because he was running a huge local metro drug ring as a blind guy. So that, I just, you know, it's sort of interesting. We say live the life you want. Now, I'm sure Brian would tell you that's probably not the life he should have lived, but at the time he was living the life he wanted. And he was running. He was the boss. And, you know, he wasn't convicted of any violent crime. It was all drug stuff, and he's in prison forever because of it, essentially, because I think he's, you know, by the time he gets to 2046, he'll be in his 80s, maybe. But I just thought, you know, Kevin, Jessica, should this be an area of expansion for BEP? You know, he is entrepreneurial. He made lots of money as a blind guy. So when we say blind people can do anything, we mean it. The other thing I just want to let you know is that, yes, indeed, it's true that I've served as general counsel to the Federation officially since September of 2020. And I just want to make sure that you all know you can approach our legal program anytime with issues, concerns. We'll do our best. We get several hundred requests to take cases every year, and we can't do it all. But we often can turn people to resources. And just go to our website. That's the main thing I want to say. That's www.nfb.org/legal. And Valerie Yingling is our main point of contact in terms of organizing the cases and doing the intakes on that legal website page. So you can call Valerie, you can email legal@nfb.org, or you can, we have a very accessible web form to fill out something. So I just want to make sure you folks know about that. It really truly is my honor and privilege to help manage our multi-million dollar legal program and to advance our rights in so many ways. It's really been a lot of great work that we do. And we do it as intelligently and smartly as we can. So, Jessica, that is what I care to say about the Mackus case. And I just want to let you know that I've been listening live to as much as I can, given my circumstances, and you are doing an awesome job. It sounds like a great convention. Here is to all of you. And we will be talking to you later. I'm recording these remarks because,
all right,
quite frankly,
thank you,
I never
so
know what's going
much
to be happening minute to minute here in the hospital.
Thank you. So our Colorado Center for the Blind crew, while you're heading up, why don't we go ahead and have some door prizes, if we could get about five of those going real quick.
We got it. All right. We have three different bags. In each bag, there is some hot chocolate, a mug, some Pippi muffins, and gift card from Greeley. And the first one is Wesley Jarbo.
Ooh.
Is Wesley here?
He was here. He's there.
Okay. There you go. All right, the next one is for the same thing, and it goes to Nick Eisenberg. Are you here, Nick? All right, take that to Nick, please. And then we have... Oh, wait. All right. Greg Baranovich. No, Greg Baranovich. You have Greg? Negative. Okay. I know this person's here. Paul Sandoval.
Bingo.
How about Barry Skur?
Yes.
Exhibit Hall. Do you know if he's still here? You think he is still here? Okay. He got some pretzel bites. There you go, Jessica.
Okay, we'll do one auction item. We've got Pippi Adams' wonderful little breads in the platter, and it's very, very good, and it's homemade, all homemade. I think we said it was worth $75 or $80, maybe more.
It's worth way, way, way more.
Way, way, way more than that. I bought it last year. All right. And it's a huge, she's got pumpkin bread and this bread and that bread and the other bread. I can never remember all the breads, but, and it's also worth a lot of bread. So we'll start the bidding at $60. $60 for the, six, Shao, 70 Marianne. I heard Aragon. Shao. 90 Shao. 90 Shao. Brett, 100 beans. Brett's the man, stepping up. 110 Shao. 110 Shao, Brett, where are you? Oh, 120 from the big Brett man. Brett, bread for Brett. What do we have? Shao? 125? 125 Shao. Going once. 130, Brett. There's enough to share throughout the entire center, whichever one of you. What'd you say, 35? 130. 130, sorry, I lose track. Thank you, team. 130 going once, twice. 135 Shao, 135 Shao. I love deaf blind people because they're loud, you can hear them. 140, Brett. Oh,
he's serious.
And the war is on. 140 going once, 140 twice. Did I hear another one? 145 Shao, 145 Shao. 145 Shao. After the CCB report, we're going to hear from the CCB student and their next basket, and we're going to do one of the treasure chests from a CCB graduate. Okay, where are we? 145?
150 Boyer.
150 Boyer. Going once. Going twice, Boyer. Shao?
Don't do it, Chow.
Sold to Brett. Thank you.
So, without further ado, we're going to welcome to the stage for a presentation from the Colorado Center for the Blind, our executive director, our secretary, Julie Deaton.
There's always gonna be another mountain. I'm always gonna wanna make it move. Always gonna be an uphill battle. Sometimes I'm gonna have to lose. It ain't about how fast I get there. Ain't about what's waiting on the other side.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I must say that Jessica Beauchamp's presidential report was amazing. So phenomenal. And I just had to say that about Jessica. There is always so much that is going on at the Colorado Center for the Blind. And one of the things that we want to see for everybody that attends training at the Colorado Center for the Blind or all of our staff members at the Colorado Center for the Blind, that they are free to live their lives and that they know that they're going to be living the life that they want. And so I'm going to start off my report today by introducing to all of you Chip Johnson. So, I remember hiring Chip, and he had a group interview at our Acoma facility. He's been working at the center for a very long time, but he will be leaving us this December to move to Philadelphia, and I know he's going to have a lot of new adventures, but I wanted us all to get to hear from Chip a little bit. We will be having a couple different parties for Chip. He gets to have two. He'll have one in person and one virtual. But without further ado, here is Chip Johnson.
Well, thank you, Julie. You know, I have worked for the center since, I believe, April of 2000. So longer than many of our students have been alive, which is really kind of sobering. But anyway, so Julie asked me just to talk about, you know, some of the differences and some things that were different. And so I have to say that one of the reasons I think that I work for the center is that I was a student at the center, and I was thinking about this, and it reminded me of a voice from our past, and some of you might remember hearing something like, "Back in 1990," and that's a poor imitation, but that reminds me of Ray McGeorge. One of our great leaders, and so I first learned about the center really in at the 1988 convention in Chicago, which was the first one that where center students presented, and I got to thinking, oh, you know, it would be great to go there, and so I got in touch with Diane McGeorge, and she at that time said, you need to go through the process, go through VR, because at that time we were trying to establish a record that they were denying blind people the right to go to centers. So I ended up going to several appeals and everything, and the bottom line was they said, no, sorry, we have a facility here that's equivalent, which of course they did not, but they said that. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm probably going to have to move out there. And at that time, there were some funds available. I believe it was from a home for the blind that was closing. And so the center got some money. And so I got a call from Diane, who I'm proud to say I am one of Diane's kids, and I'll always be one of Diane's kids. And she said, you know, we have some funds available, you know, it wouldn't be for a full program, but you can come out here and you can get started and then get set up with VR in Colorado, which is what I did. And so I came in 1990, and shortly after that, there was a guy named Kevin that showed up. I think he was from Missouri or somewhere. He was a rabble-rouser. And still is, by the way, which is good, because sometimes the rabble needs to be roused. But he was a student. I think at that time, when I was a student, I think we had around 10. So that shows you now we're at, what, Julie, 25? Or
yes.
We're about 25 students. And so that shows you the growth. We were on South Broadway, about a block and a half south of Evans. And it's funny because I went in, that location is now a veterinarian, and I went into that location because I had to take my cat there, and the guy said, oh yeah, we used to be a blind school. I said, yeah, I know, I was a student here. But it was a much smaller facility than what we have now. You know, I would say that's the thing that I've seen over the years that I've been working at the center, been a student and working at the center, is the growth that we have. More students, larger facilities, you know, the technology has obviously changed. You know, we were using, when I first started teaching at the center, we were using Braille lights and the PacMate, with the Braille keyboard, which a lot of you younger guys probably don't even know what these things are, but you can Google it. Yeah, VersaBraille, absolutely. Used one of those in college. So we've just grown so much. You know, at the time when I was working, we didn't have all of the different programs that we have now. We have senior programs. We have programs for youth. So, you know, we're not just an organization that just sits and does, you know, one thing and we say, okay, we're doing this great and we'll just keep doing it. We look for new things that we can do. And so, you know, I think that's what's kept us going, is that, you know, we're always trying to innovate and everything. So, you know, it's been, I would say, you know, I've had so many opportunities because of the center. I wouldn't be living in Colorado, of course, if I hadn't gone to the center. You know, opportunities to learn about new technologies, to go to conventions. I mean, I think sometimes we don't think about the opportunities that we have because of the NFB that we might not have ever had before. So I'm going to be moving out to the Philadelphia area, be living with my brother and his family for a little while until I sell my house and buy another house. But, well, I can come back. I can come back and visit. I know, I don't know. Maybe not next year, because I don't know what's going to happen. But, yeah, not everybody at the same time, though, please. I'm not going to be able to buy that big of a house. But, you know, I would say, you know, let's keep innovating and let's keep doing things better and doing more things so that, you know, we won't stay in the same place that we grow. And as Julie said, that's true for students at the center. That's true for everybody at the center. We all have to think about our lives and moving forward. So I appreciate the opportunity to speak. And, you know, I'm still part of the Colorado family, and I'll be coming to visit the delegation at conventions when I'm able to get back, and I'll be glad to come back here sometime to a convention or whatever, but, you know, you're not done with me. I'll just be moving to another part of the family.
All right, thank you so much, Chip, and we all love you, and, you know, I love hearing these stories, and you can imagine, I can't imagine Chip and Kevin Worley being roommates together, but they were, so, and they both survived, so that's what is important. You're both here to talk about it, too. I'm getting my notes fired up, so that's why I am stalling momentarily here. At the Colorado Center for the Blind, we believe blind people can do anything. Every day, we encourage and challenge each student, and they come to understand their potential as they build the skills and confidence to live the life they want. Because when you believe in yourself and experience a thriving community of positive blind people, nothing can hold you back from pursuing your dreams. In the past 8 months, our three NFB centers, LCB, Blind Incorporated, and the Colorado Center for the Blind, have been working with Mission Minded in order to craft our branding for our three NFB centers. What I read to you is our one-minute message. I am so excited about the work that we have done, and we'll be sharing out all of the branding work that we've been doing with all of you in the next few months. Jessica talked a lot about the branding that we have done with the National Federation of the Blind, And as we know, the Colorado Center for the Blind is part of the National Federation of the Blind. So I'm so excited about this. I wanted to let all of you know that our youth programs have been thriving under the leadership of Anahit Labar. Anahit has done a spectacular job. Anahit has just been with the center for about a year now, a little over a year, and she has passion, creativity, and is always loves more than anything working with young blind people. I always hear a smile on her face, and her energy is contagious. When she starts talking about working with these little kids and all the difference she can make, all the difference we can all make, I want to tell you all today that Anahit will be leaving the Colorado Center for the Blind, but it's great because she's moving into a new position with Denver Public Schools where she's going to get to work with little blind kids as a teacher. So, Anahit, I hope that you're listening. I want to tell you how proud I am of you and we all are of you and how much we will love to continue to work with you to make a big difference for all of the blind kids. Now, I want to tell you the impact that we have. As you all know, we have one of our students. I'm just going to randomly kind of choose a couple of our students to talk about a little bit. Hopefully they won't mind. Mason comes to us from California, and Mason was a student at the California School for the Blind, and he oftentimes talks to me about all the things he's never, ever done, like cooking on a stove. He never had any opportunity to cook on a stove until he attended our summer program at the Colorado Center for the Blind, and now he's in our ITP program. He never had opportunity to really travel on his own at all. Now he's just traveling all over the place. So I'm so excited that we had Mason in our summer program, as many other students too we had in our summer program, and then they transitioned into our year-round program. We had a really exciting two different summer programs this year. We had we were planning on having 2 3-week programs, but as a result of COVID, one of them was reduced down to 2 weeks. You know, we've had to go with the flow, as we all have for the past couple years, in order to make things work. But what all really matters is making things work for all of us as blind people. So in the future, Anahit has put together a great framework for our youth programs. We are going to continue to be building our year-round services. We're going to be working in school districts. We are currently working with the Colorado School for the Deaf and Blind. And I want to mention how much I appreciate all of our ITP students. So many of them go down regularly to Colorado Springs once a month to meet with students down there and teachers down there, because you all, as our amazing students, are such great role models. We will be holding our Thanksgiving celebration for our Fun Activities and Skills Training program in November. And this is what brings together parents who have blind kids, of all ages. All of us come to this and we act as role models, working with parents, teaching them how to cook, as well as with learning shades on. And then the younger blind students are cooking too. So it all comes together and we're all working together. And what better thing to celebrate the independence of blind youth through Thanksgiving and having a full meal together and sitting down together. I wanted to tell all of you some pretty exciting news that Chaz Davis will be our Director of Youth Services. So he'll be moving into that position, and we'll all be working together to keep things moving forward. Next, I want to talk a little bit about our independence training program. And I'd like to thank Maureen Neatfelt for all of her hard work. She's been with us back again for about a year and a half now. We have, first of all, at our center, our staff and our students, we have a lot of fun together. We all have fun. And we joke around at announcements and talk about that we are a big family, and we know we are. But one thing that Maureen does in her position is, and this has really evolved in the past year, is put together a lot of materials to welcome our incoming students. And she goes over all the details with them, even the boring policies that they end up needing to read so that they're familiar with that. And we have a lot of students that have a lot of medical issues. And so Maureen works closely with all of the students to make sure that they're connected to doctors and everything that they need so that they can have the best experience ever to be a student at the center. Now, our Kane Travel staff has done a great job, and along with Maureen and Duncan Larson and several people, to do research so that we have a whole new style of, we used to call them sleep shades, now we call them learning shades, but now we're almost moving to a new term called learning goggles. So we have, I think some of you that are former students would love to see these. They're kind of like they're like goggles now that we have available for people to use, and they're very comfortable. They work really well, but they look, you know, people blend in to the crowd a bit more. Unfortunately, with a lot of people that are on the streets right now, a lot of mentally ill people and homeless people, as well as just a lot of traffic down in Union Station, a lot of our students were being taunted with the usual sleep shades that we had. So now we have our new style of learning shades, and I really feel like our students love them, and it's really making a difference for everybody. That is such a significant and critical tool that we have, so it's so important. So again, in talking about our wonderful students, are resilient. They're ready to handle anything, anytime, any day. I appreciate all of you so much, our students. Right now, for example, our apartments are being remodeled. So they are squished into one side of the apartments. They all have had to move, some people twice, some people just one time, and then they'll be moving back again. But maybe they've complained to each other a lot, but they haven't complained to me all too much at all. And these guys are willing to just do whatever it takes to make things work. And I just want to tell you all how much we appreciate, and I appreciate you too. Thank you, everybody. So one thing that we teach at our center is that it's all about giving back. And we have a new staff member at the center. Her name is Josie Mills. We love Josie. Josie is our new administrative coordinator, and she has already been working with Arapahoe Community College and a food bank. And so our students and staff members are going to be working at a food bank in November. But she's done a million things since she started her job just about, 2 months ago. So Josie, thank you for everything, and we love having you at the center. Another new employee that's full-time with us now, his name, he's amazing, is Paul Stewart. Paul is our residential manager. He lives at the apartment, so if someone's sink is leaking or something's going on, he'll go over and check it out and do what needs to be done to make it happen. But not only does he do that, Paul is teaching woodshop at the center and home maintenance at the center, and he's overseeing both buildings. So Paul is a former student at the center, and he and his three kids, who are wonderful kids, they live at the apartment. So thank you, Paul, for all of your great work. Eileen Gallegos is another person that started with us at the center, and I love Eileen so much. I met Eileen when she was in high school, and I was her rehabilitation counselor. And Eileen is our residential instructor, works with our students in teaching them cooking and cleaning and orientation at the apartment. So Eileen is a longtime member of the National Federation of the Blind. So we're really excited to welcome Eileen to our staff as well. So one of the things that is really that we focus on at the center is moving people forward in their lives. When they come to the center, not only are they coming for blindness training, but they are coming to obtain housing for their futures. Thanks to Maureen, Chaz Davis, and others, so many of our independence training students who are graduating from the center now have their own apartments in the Denver metro area. It's so exciting. I wanted to also mention that Kimberly Crouch Wong, who does all of our employment and academic skills training, is on the cutting edge of doing so much. So we had a student named Kennedy who was at our center for just a short while, and Yolanda Thompson has also worked extensively with Kennedy. But Kennedy's gone back to Minnesota now. But thanks to the work of our technology instructors and Kimberly and others, Kennedy has now been accepted into a certification course with Salesforce through the Blind Institute of Technology, and he will be obtaining employment. Thanks to the National Federation of the Blind, because if it weren't for Scott LaBarre and the National Federation of the Blind, we would not have had the opportunity to meet with four employees from Amazon 2 weeks ago. We had employees from Amazon that flew out to the center to meet with us, and we talked with them about accommodations extensively. But I must tell all of you that what they were most impressed with and what they learned the most from, it wasn't sitting around and talking to us. It was walking around the center and seeing the center in action and seeing Shane and others in the kitchen making yeast rolls, seeing people down in the wood shop, seeing people at the computers, seeing our Braille library, seeing all of this is what made a major difference for them so that they could really learn about our capabilities as blind people. Now, sometimes things are magical, I have to tell you, because a couple days before the Amazon people arrived, Vaughn Beck applied at Amazon. And so Vaughn and now Dalton Brand have both been hired by Amazon. And they will be starting their work on November 9th. Now, we know it's not going to be, I don't expect it to be very smooth. Vaughn, I don't think you expect that either. But what we know is that we have each other. We have the Colorado Center for the Blind and the National Federation of the Blind, and we will be working together to make sure that your jobs work out well for you and that all other jobs for blind people who work at Amazon are a success. Our senior program is the best in the country. Our staff is dedicated, determined, committed, and most importantly, caring and loving as well. So a few months ago, Duncan Larson came into my office. And she said, Julie, I think I'm going to retire. You know, I've got a lot to do, a lot of other stuff to do. And I said, okay, Duncan, if that's what you'd like to do, because I always support our staff. And then about a month later, she came back into my office and she said, Julie, I hope you're not going to be mad at me, but I changed my mind. So I was really happy, and we are... have Duncan working her magic, and she has that full belief in blind people. We have hired back in the last year Robert Dyson to work with us. Robert is working with people, doing a lot of work over the phone, talking with people, helping them really realize that blindness does not need to stop them and that they're going to be okay. Thanks to Chris Parsons and Stephanie Baldwin and Sean Spears for having that full belief in blind people. You know, it comes through, it shines through every day, the work that we do at the center. And our older blind people, when they walk in that front door and they see positive blind role models and they see people using their canes everywhere, they in turn know that it is respectable to be blind. I want to also mention that we had our In Charge program in May, and it was such a success. One of the things that several of the participants commented on was the work that they did down in the shop with Paul Stewart. They never thought they'd be using table saws and everything, and thank you for making that happen, Paul. It gave them so much confidence in themselves. So I'm going to end this piece of my presentation by talking about our brand values. Dream without limits. Be bold. Be part of something bigger. Work with love. Respect everyone. Honor every voice and experience. Thank you. Right, I'm not done. I'm not done. I have such an honor here, and this is so much fun. So I, first of all, I want to thank our President Beacham for giving me this honor to get to do this morning or this afternoon. So I have the honor of presenting an award to somebody, and I'm going to start to cry before I get to present it, but I'll keep myself together here. So yes, I will, Kevin. Kevin? All right. So I met this person soon after I began working at the Colorado Center for the Blind. This person is a woman. She came into my office, and she started talking about... I'm going to give it away in a moment because she's got to come up here. She started talking about she was a sculptor, and she had done sculpting forever and ever for a long time. And then she started wondering about, you know, this is so tactile. Do blind people really, you know, she started thinking about blindness, and do blind people, can they really figure this stuff out? And so... she came into the center. I am going to keep myself together because Kevin is going to make sure of it. Okay. So we just started talking. She came into the center, and then she said, Julie, do you think, would you be, I don't even know how she ended up in my office exactly, but she said, Julie, do you think you would be interested in exploring this much more? And just learning about how blind people can learn through tactile art. At that time, it was through her bas-reliefs and her sculpting work. And so Anne Cunningham, if you'll come forward, I would love that. All right. So Anne, in the past so many years, has done so much for all of us as blind people, and she was going to be continuing to do it. Anne is dedicated to what she does, and I now love art personally. I never liked art before, even. I met, and now I love it. So Anne and I can talk for hours all about it. So Anne, I am honored to present to you this plaque. It says the NFB of Colorado Everest Award, Anne Cunningham. Your gifts and talents have taken the field of tactile art to new heights. Thank you for your 24 hours of teaching through touch. I'm reading this braille. Through touch, inspiring creativity, and making our world a more beautiful place. We respect you tremendously, but above all else, we love you. October 29th, 2022. Here you go, Anne.
I can't thank you enough. This, it takes, I can't remember the last time I cried. NFB is my tribe, but CCB is my family, you know? And thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Anne. We love you. Continuing to be working with Anne, and it's going to be wonderful. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
After we get done with our hugging party up here, we'll do something else. You guys just have to wait a second. Go for it. All right, we're going to do some auction items as you guys continue to work on lunch. And do we have a door prize? Maybe a door prize?
We sure have a few door prizes. Yeah. Real quick, we have, this one happens to be virtual, and it's a gift card for Village Inn. Kenneth Parkins. Is Kenneth Parkins on?
Who was it?
Give me the name again, please.
Kenneth Parkins. Ken Parkins.
One of the seniors, the senior program.
One of the seniors, and he is virtual.
Oh, is he here? Is he here virtual, Paul?
Do not see him on Zoom.
Okay, draw again.
Okay. We have... Okay, this one is for... Andrea... Brandeis? Yes.
Yay! Okay.
And everyone at her table gets a gift card.
Zachary.
With Andrea today.
Zach Parks, are you here? Okay, can you come up, please?
This way. You come up here.
Also, Michelle. Is it Michelle? No. Yeah, from the center. Student Association. If you would come up as well. In the meantime, let's do a Denver chapter basket, which is, this is cool. It's a garden party room spray and candle travel gift set. It has all this Scentsy all-purpose cleaner. It's got a candle. It's got all kinds of beautiful stuff. Sensory bathroom cleaners, Scentsy bar, I can't even. Scentsy hand soap. Oh, my God. I think I want this. Scentsy fragrance mist. I want the mist. We also, it's just a beautiful thing, and it's $90 donated by our, it's a beautiful thing. Everything I sell is a beautiful thing. It's a $90 value, so somebody wants to smell their place good. Wait, smell their place good. Oh, my goodness. All right, start bidding, Shao. $90 value from the Denver chapter. Start the bidding at 40. Marine 40, thank you, Marine. 50, 60, 65, 70. From the Denver chapter, you guys, 70 from Maureen. 75. 75 going once.
Was that Sean?
Yes, Sean is at 75 because he likes his place to smell good. So, yeah. The rest of you guys, I guess you don't care if you have a funky, you know. As I always say when my assistant comes in the morning, I'm like, this place smells like man and dog, which is not very good. Maybe I should bid on this. 75, Sean, going 75, Sean, going once. 75, Sean, going twice. 75, Sean, sold. Now, 75, Deshaun Spears, $75. Is Colorado Center Student Association? All right. You're next. Fittingly, we need to continue to highlight our Colorado Center for the Blind. She's going to come to the mic, tell us about her basket, and auction it. All right? Here you go. Right.
Thank you. This is Brenda Harrison, president of the Student Association at Center of the Blind. We love our students at CCB. We are so proud of them. We are raffling off a few other baskets out in the hall, so come see us out there. But today we put together a basket to auction here. It is a picnic basket, a wicker picnic basket, a table, a little picnic table that we made in wood shop with Paul Stewart. The picnic table actually holds a bottle of Jack Daniels. And it's still full. There's. I thought about drinking it last night. There are four shot glasses in there. There's a little trivet board that I made for you. And there's a Jack Daniels glass candle that one of our students made. So value is priceless.
Where do you want to open it?
Oh, me?
You're going to do it? Yeah.
Okay, opening the bidding at $50. We have 50, 55, 60.
$70.
We're at 70. We're at 100. Do I have 110?
What are we at?
100. Who has 100?
We're at 100. Going once. Going twice. Sold at $100. Woo! To Maureen. Thank you.
Thank you. I love it when the students do the auction because I guarantee everybody's tired of hearing my voice. Don't all boo at once. Okay, so next, speaking of the Colorado Center for the Blind, we are so proud of our graduates who go on and do fantastic things. You heard Julie's report. Several years ago, Zachary Parks graduated from the center and hadn't been blind that long and got his Freedom Bell. And has gone up to the mountains and changed lives. He does wonderful things. He is now a licensed massage therapist. We'll probably try to auction one of those off later today. Who knows? But he's had interesting jobs, including working in a pot plant. I've really enjoyed that job. I really appreciate it. Anyway, so as you know, every year or last couple years, we've been delighted to auction off one of his amazing treasure chests. I actually have three pieces of furniture in my house that Zach has made for me. And man, he doesn't, he charges a bundle. Let me just say this. I'd like him to describe, we have one at the banquet, and we're going to do one right now in honor of our Colorado Center for the Blind. I want Zach to describe this first treasure chest. Zach Parks, here you go. There you go, buddy. I'm going to pull the mic up, probably.
There you go. All right, everyone can hear me there? All right, so I brought two treasure chests this year. Kevin put one online, so you guys have seen the description of that. I brought a surprise one this year. This is the same beetle kill pine, so when I say that, it's a pine wood that has greens, grays, and blues in it from the beetles burrowing into them before they die. So I clear coat them, I stain them. This one, I had my 13-year-old daughter also wood burn the design of the Colorado license plate on the top of it. So it's got the mountains, it says Colorado across the bottom half of the lid. The side handles are like a square steel. It's got a square knob on the front, and the inside is material called flocking. It's like a felt material, like the inside of a jewelry box, and this one matches the same green that's on the Colorado license plate.
All right, so, I'm sorry, what size? What size? Is that what the... Marianne, what was the question? How... Yeah, you can bring it around. I don't know, what. How would you describe the size, the dimensions?
Yep.
Okay, here you go.
No, he's saying he doesn't... He didn't
no, I don't know.
Oh, he doesn't know. He just makes the stuff. He doesn't even know... All right, so I can tell you it's wonderful, like I say, I have some of his stuff in my house. By the way, while we pass it around a little bit, I also am fortunate enough to have some art from Ann Cunningham in my home, and I just think that we have wonderful people in this organization. All right, we're going to start the bidding at $100 for this treasure chest. $100, homemade, 60 hours of time. 10 inches tall, 10 inches deep, 14 inches long, as Kevin Kovacs. Per Kevin Kovacs. And I don't know about his measuring capacity. I think I'm not going to repeat that. All right, we're at $100. Who wants to start the bidding? Jordan at $100. 120 Kimberly. 130 Tad. 140 Kimberly, 150 Chad, 160, 170, 200, 210, 220, 230, 250, 260, 270, did I hear 280? 280, 290, this is a... 290.
Three Jordan.
Jordan, you're going to get a deal. This is absolutely gorgeous. 300 Jordan. 310. This is going 310. You couldn't buy this on the open market for 310, I can tell you that. 310. Anyone want to go higher? What? 330. 335.
Over.
Okay, I don't hear.
Maybe it was just the ghost.
I think it was over to my left. It was the ghost of Federation Past. 330, wanting to bid more is what it is. 330 going once. Okay. Someone's got an abacus over there. 340 working on her fingers. 340 going. All right, let's go to 350. Who's got 350? 340 going to 350. 350. Let's get Braille into the hands of these blind kids. Come on, y'all. 350. We got a 340. We're going 350. 340 once. You guys are missing a lifetime of great treasure chesting. 340 twice. 350 Aragon. Thank you. 355. I should say no five. We're only going $10 increments. No, 355. 400, Chansey. Hey, Chansey, in your library, do you use thermoform? 400. What? The only tactile graphics when I was a kid we had was a Christmas tree made out of thermoform. So, all right, 400, Chansey, 400 going once. 400 going twice. We're going to send this treasure chest to New York, New York. That's all I got. That's all I got for now.
All right, so can I have Brett Boyer and Jordan Castor to the front, please? So this is always a very favorite item on the agenda, where we get to really take some time and learn a little bit more about a couple of our members. We always kind of try to keep it a little bit of a surprise about who it's going to be. This year we have two people who I think you're going to really enjoy getting to learn a little bit more about them and a little bit more about their journey through blindness. We have Ms. Jordan Castor from Boulder, Colorado, and Brett Boyer from Littleton, Colorado. By way of New Jersey, he's a Jersey boy.
Well, I found the microphone. Hello. Can you guys hear me okay? Sweet. So, for those of you who haven't got to talk to my big-mouthed, raspy voice self yet, I'm Jordan, and I moved here from San Francisco in 2020, and I'm super excited to share a little bit of my story with you today. So, I was born 15 weeks early at 1 pound, 9 ounces, and my grandpa could hold me in the palm of his hands. His wedding ring, if you all can picture a wedding ring, his wedding ring could go all the way up to my shoulder. And the doctors, you know, they told my mom that I wouldn't really have a quality of life, and that she was going to have to make a decision on what she wanted them to do for me. And my mom, bless her, said, do everything you can to save this child. And my grandma told me about how she would sit by my bed in the incubator, because I was in the incubator for 110 days, and she would sit there and she would pray, God, if she's going to lose her eyesight, you know, just let her keep her brain, is exactly what she told me. And so my family support has really been there from the start. But like my mom, she didn't know any different. I was her first kid. I think that's a good thing. Get the craziest out first. And so she treated me like any other kid. Like I was, you know, I rollerbladed in the neighborhood. I rode a bike. I was on the track team. I went to the Braille Challenge. I was skiing. But she treated me like anybody else, you know. One of my first choices of occupations was to be a bus driver. Y'all, I have ROP. I am not driving a bus anytime soon. But instead of saying like, oh honey, that's impossible, like you can't do that. No, she got me a Fisher Price bus, and I can assure you, you know, there were bus stops all over our living room. And when it came down to it, really, what I wanted was to help kids with disabilities and help other people with disabilities. And like I said, you know, the support of my family never wavered. But, you know, I think of you guys as a family, so I'm going to be really raw and open and honest with you. That didn't stop me from noticing the differences between my peers and I. Now, I'm sure you all remember, like, 6th grade, 7th grade, and that was, like, just awful, horrible. And, you know, I'm a very religious person, so there were times in my life when I would say, why? Why, God? Why did you do this to me? Why can everyone around me see, but I can't? Why did you make me this way, God? And I reached the lowest point in my life. But then, that summer, I was introduced to the first part of the NFP philosophy at a camp in Greenville, Michigan, called Camp Tasmahita. And it was there that I roasted my first marshmallow. I roasted my first hot dog. It was blind staff, blind kiddos. It was amazing. You know, I worked in a wood shop. We went sailing. There was music camps and soapstone sculpturing and canoeing. And, I mean, we did it all on those 370-acre woods in Michigan. It was so much fun. And, you know, J.J. Medall, I've known him since he was my camp counselor when I was 12. And he really, he really made a difference in my life because, you know, he is a bringer together-er. And I could feel the love and the belonging in that camp. And I knew that I belonged there. And so my confidence really blossomed because of the love and encouragement and the belief in me that my blind mentors and friends had. And I carried this confidence and this knowledge with me throughout my school year, knowing I could really return to those camps and fill my soul cup every summer. And there were two summers in particular that really stood out to me and changed my life within those two, you know, impressionable teenage years. In 2007, I attended the NFP Youth Slam. And it was there that I learned that I could pursue a degree in computer science and really help change the landscape of technology for blind people all over the world. I had blind mentors and, you know, I still keep in contact with the people who taught me computer science way back then. I got to make a chatbot. I don't know if you all remember MSN. But it was like one of those bots where you could message it stuff and it would message you back. And I built in this like vocabulary dictionary lookup so I could do my English homework and just like really cool stuff. And it was very formative because I learned then that I could really pursue this degree in computer science. And that was what I wanted to do with my life. That was my life's calling. And I think I also got my love of, motivational speaking from the Youth Slam because they were like, you're going to go up and give our chatbot speech. And I was like, all right. Never spoke before in my life, but here we go. But whether it was dissecting sharks or launching rockets or marching on Capitol Mall in Washington, D.C., just to name a few things, the NFP taught me that week this phrase. And it says, slam that. So we said, slam that to those low expectations. Slam that to when people said blind people can't do anything. We would say, slam that. And in 2009, I attended my first convention in Detroit. And I'll tell you, remember that circular place? Oh my goodness. I will tell you that the NFP family, you know, opened their hearts and their arms and their love to me. Like, I was walking, and I tried to get on an escalator that was coming at me. And I gracefully fell on my bottom in the middle of convention, and these two older women were like, come here, let me take your hand, let me show you how to feel. I'm feeling as if you guys can see me touching the up escalator right now. Let me show you how to feel the way the escalators are going. And I've never forgotten the kindness of those two women for just something so simple. And, you know, I've only missed one convention since then. And if there's one thing that you take away from this presentation, please, please, please go to a national convention. There's absolutely nothing like a 3,000 person Federation cheer, though you guys are pretty good. The presidential report is amazing. The banquet speech is amazing. And of course, all the other fun things you do and the friends that you'll surely meet while you're there. But, you know, nothing is more empowering or just completely fills my soul and my heart to the brim with pride more than anything than just being surrounded by my closest family and friends, all believing in one another's successes and pushing each other to be the best people that we can be. Now, the phrase "slam that" came along with me to college as I became the first blind student from Michigan State to graduate with my degree in computer science. And now, y'all, that's my career. I work with some of the most brilliant minds in the industry, and I improve the braille and screen reading support of our products. And it's incredible work. And I'm so, so, so grateful for everyone who's helped me make that dream a reality. I might get a little emotional from this, but fast forward a couple years to April 2017. Because my mom had me, and she was experienced in raising a wild blind child, she knew exactly what to do when she saw the face of a 2-year-old little boy on a website listing blind children in China who needed to find their forever homes. Theo means gift from God, and Xavier means new home. And again, 1 year later, she knew what to do when she saw the face of another 2-year-old little boy who she knew had to be Theo's little brother, Grayson Zane. Grayson is also blind. We welcomed our third blind brother, our foreign exchange student, Sean, into our family, and he's from Kyrgyzstan, and he's now here in the United States. He just got his visa to become a language, and he wants to become a language interpreter for the government, and he wants to learn 10 different languages. All three of my brothers will now always know the love of a forever family. They will never have to be alone. Our family and the NFB family will be there to show them the way. Now, I also have two younger sisters, Madison, who's 22. She's pursuing a teaching degree. And yesterday she informed me that she was doing her research paper on how to teach blind kids in the classroom. And I don't really know where she got that from. I was like, So if any of you, as I said, classic Mads, classic. So if any of you have any content for her, well, let me know. And I have another sister, Caitlin, who's 25, and she just had the most adorable little baby on the planet. And I'm an auntie. So I'm so extremely proud to be all of their big sisters. I carry the knowledge in my heart and soul that it is respectable to be blind. Blindness does not equal bad or less than. I am wonderfully made, put on this earth for a purpose. My blindness is just a part of me, one of the many characteristics about me, like my love for Oreo cheesecake, or the fact that I'm a cat mom, or that I love a good thrill, whether it's jumping out of an airplane or whitewater rafting. It's just part of me. You know, blindness might seem like an impossible mountain to some of you right now. Or blindness might seem just like a characteristic, like you might have as many canes as you have types of shoes. Or you might be somewhere in the middle. But don't worry, my mountain people. We've all been there. And with high expectations and your NFB family by your side, anything is possible. The sky is truly the limit. Wherever you are in your journey, please know your NFB family will be here every step of the way and saying, yes, yes, you can. I sincerely hope you learn a lot this weekend. Take a risk. Do something that scares you, stretches your skills and confidence a bit, and know that we're here rooting for you. We believe in you. I hope you can feel deep down in your bones the love, the hope, and determination in this room. I can feel it. I can feel it. And that love, that hope, that determination, my friends, my new Colorado family, is what drew me to the NFB. Let's continue building this Federation family together. Remember that phrase? Slam that! And keep being your bold, brave, beautiful, authentic, blind selves, living the lives you want. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jordan. Next up, we have Brett Boyer. And Brett has been with us a few years. How many years have you guys been here now? Like 5 years? 5 years? Wow. Time flies when you're having fun this time. But I'm not going to tell a story for him because obviously I don't know it real well. So I'm going to turn the microphone over to Brett Boyer.
Welcome to WEFA. In New Jersey, Boone, New Jersey. If you'd like to request a song or dedicate a song or hear a story, just dial this number, 2990-838. That's 2990-838. I'll say it one more time, 2990-838. And now, we're gonna,
Oh, cut it off a little early, that's okay. Adjust the mic, sorry. I feel a little inadequate following that amazing, amazing speech. I want you guys to end on such a high note like that, so hopefully I can compare to Jordan. That was such an awesome speech. Thank you, Jordan. So that was me at about 7 years old, doing my little blind kid radio thing, which some of us probably did, because back then radio was all we had, guys. I know it sounds really crazy, but back in my day, I had a tape recorder and a bunch of tapes and another tape recorder because I was that kid, and I would play the music on one, talk up the record while I did the intro. So that was just a little sample of what I sounded like. I actually have like one tape left out of all the tapes I made, which is weird because I taped everything, all the adults. I could never understand why adults were so angry that I would always have a tape recorder running until I got a little older and realized the things I might have caught, you know, that could be used later in life. You never know. So just a couple of stories as a blind kid. I was told about the first two. The first one was that somebody had decided to leave the door open and little blind Brett decided to walk outside and end up in the middle of the street at about 2 years old. And the next story I heard was that someone left the basement door open to the stairs with the stone floor at the bottom and little blind Brett, bumbity bumbity bum, right down the stairs. So those are the two stories my family loves to tell. I mean, I didn't love to hear them as much as they love to tell them, but I did grow up blind. I grew up as a totally blind kid. I always thought I had light perception, but it turns out this whole time I was just feeling heat on my eye that I thought was light. I didn't learn that till about 25. So the couple little snapshots I want to talk about until, you know, before I get into my older NFB life, my pre-NFB life, I'll call it for now, was the first time I thought I knew where the mailbox was on the corner to mail a letter. And I brailled a letter, and I had it, an envelope, and I knew where the mailbox was, and I was determined, and I walked out of my house, and I just walked to that corner where I thought the mailbox was, and there wasn't. So I just kept walking and walking and got completely lost. This was about 5 or 6 years old, no cane, just a little blind kid with his letter looking for a mailbox. And that is just sort of one of those things when I heard when Jess had asked me to do this and I started thinking about this kid and where he came from and where what he became. And those are the two big prominent things that I can remember. The one more prominent thing was about 8 or 9 years old, and we had a power outage in our house. And the person at the time, they needed to find the candles, but the candles were upstairs. And I was asked to lead a grown adult man up the stairs to the closet where the candles are. And that blew my flippin' mind. This little blind kid had to lead an adult male, middle-aged adult male, upstairs to the closet to where the candles are. That was messed up. I was like, wait a minute. What, they can't function? They can't, what, who? Because my whole life was that sighted people are better. Sighted people will rescue you, right? Sighted people will tell you to sit down. Sighted people will tell you don't touch that. Well, I guess a lot of adults tell kids not to touch it, but especially blind kids, right? And so that was sort of the way I grew up, is that sighted people really are in control and have, you know, these special things that I don't have. And it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me until I was about 11 years old. It's funny that Jordan mentioned 11 years old, because I was 11 when I started to feel those hardcore emotions that you feel when you're a mainstream public school kid and you're blind or disabled. Maybe now I'm sure it's a little different because there's a bit more of an awareness now. But back then, half the teachers didn't know what to do with me. My mom had to fight so hard for teachers to even have me in their class. When I asked my mom some stories about when I was going to do this speech, she told me she remembers sitting in a teacher's meeting before the next school year, and the one teacher spoke up and she said, "Mrs. Boyer, I don't know how to teach a blind kid." She says, "I don't know how to be a mom of a blind kid." But we do it, right? And she always had that, you know, she always had to fight. And she said, "I just wanted you to be normal. I just wanted you, I didn't want you to become this person that didn't do anything or go anywhere, because I knew I wasn't always going to be around." So then I found the NFB at 11 years old. I got a Christmas card. It was an invitation to a Christmas party at the New Jersey state affiliate of the NFB. So shout out to Jersey, of course. And I saw blind people, adults, blind adults, moving, doing, talking about politics and life and just enjoying themselves. And it was a whole different thing, because I'd only ever been to blind camps and blind, you know, where the partially sighted led the blind, total blind kids around, and all the staff were sighted. There might be one sort of blind staff that you never, you know, whatever. But when I saw these people doing that, I was so impressed. And then I went to their state convention in Cherry Hills, New Jersey. And it was the first time I went to one of these sort of functions, quote unquote, where nobody told me to sit down. Nobody told me to wait. As a matter of fact, some of the people even said, go get up, go find out what's up, walk around. And I did, and nobody stopped me for the first time in my life. So where does an 11-year-old kid go when everybody says that they're allowed to just go? Anybody want to guess? Starts with an E. Anybody? What? Elevator. Why do kids love elevators? I don't know. But I sure love the elevator. And I was a fast Braille reader, and that hotel had a lot of floors. So I started just playing in the elevator because nobody stopped me. And when people got on, they started calling out floor numbers. And I started pushing them for them. And next thing I know, I was being tipped. I stood in that elevator for 2 hours, guys. My mom was like, "I don't know where you've been." I was in the elevator the whole time. I made about 15 bucks. So, I don't know how I'm doing on time. I hope I don't go too long, so please watch me. Okay. So that was my introduction. And then I got to go to my first national convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I was blown away. I was blown away at the adults that were living and moving and making their own decisions. And my whole perception of life changed. I was at a very low point in sixth grade. I begged my mom to send me to a blind school. I said, send me to Overbrook, because I can't take it anymore. She said, absolutely not. She wanted me to be as normal as possible. She wanted me to be, she didn't want me to go off to some school with a bunch of other blind kids where she, you know, we've seen some of these kids in growing up. You know, they're in the corner, they're doing nothing, and they're not encouraged to ever do anything, and she didn't want me to be that kid. And so, though I hated her for a little while, she said, no, I'm not sending you to a blind school. And as I moved through the NFB, I soon got, of course, in touch with the Colorado Center for the Blind, found out about their summer youth program, and was just so excited. And then I found out how much it cost to go there. And they said, about $5,000. Commission for the Blind said, then we'll give you about $1,500. I said, oh my God, I need to go to this place. It sounds so freaking cool. So I got letters. I got together with Diane McGeorge. I don't know if I can call myself a Diane McGeorge kid. I'd like to, but I might have to be a Diane McGeorge grandkid. I mean, this was in 95, so it wasn't that far away from... You know, but I was just a kid, and we talked about going out there and raising some money. And I did. I wrote letters to Lions Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, Rotary, got a few bucks together, a little bit, and got to go for the first half of the program. And loved every moment. I never knew that blind people could just get up and do things when they wanted. You know, you want to go get a cheeseburger? Go get a cheeseburger. Because I was used to, well, if somebody can take me, I'll get a cheeseburger. Or if somebody lets me, right? Because I was a kid, but on top of it, I was a blind kid. So I just thought my whole life would be centered around somebody taking me places and me having to wait. And the center really showed me that's not true. So two summer programs and a full-time program later, I graduated in 97. At 17, I just turned 18 when I graduated the center. Did a lot of things that we don't need to talk about in those formative years. But let's just say I understand life a lot more. A lot of experiences that I think everybody should have in their life, blind people included. Included. We all have to mess up. We all have to make those mistakes. We all have to be kids. We all have to grow up. And that's what I did. It took a little while. But I grew up, I think. I'm working on it still. I did get into radio, though, by the way. I did manage to fulfill that dream that you heard in the very beginning. I worked for KZBR 97.1. And loved it for about 2 years. Until, you know, radio's just awful. We don't need to go into that. But what I do want to say is that I've been teaching at the center now for 4 years. I came back, and I'm giving back. And it is so incredible to have this experience. I teach technology, but I feel like that's just got me in the door, right? That's my secret. Because what I really get to do is I get to be a part of this transformation. I get to be a part of the trials and tribulations of our students. Whether they're adults who have lost sight recently and don't know what the future is holding, or it's blind kids who have kind of been brought up to rely on other people and to hate their blindness and to feel bad about themselves, that's why I'm here. And that's why I care. And when I hear people say, oh, I didn't do this because I'm blind, or I couldn't do this because I'm blind, I'm just like, that's not why you couldn't do this. Right? And that's the hardest and most challenging and rewarding part of my job at the center, is to be that person, to be that light for those that need it, or to be that tough love for those that need that too. To be the gentle hand that pulls them forward, or the, what, fist in the back to, you know, keep them going, keep them going. You got this, right? To be their cheerleader. because they need that. And that's where I feel like I've really given back to you guys, to all of you. So fellow Federationists, I just want to say a few things to the parents and teachers of blind children. Please push them, challenge them, make their life a living hell for just a little bit, because that's what they need. Stop coddling your blind kids. Make them read Braille, please, for God's sake, make them read Braille. Please. Literacy, spelling, it's so important. I mean, it's important in our whole society, but especially as blind people, because we have to work twice as hard as sighted people, guys. I'm sorry. That's just the truth. If you want to be decent, Marianne Miggs has said this before, if you want to be that person, you want to get that job, you have to bring something to the table, and you have to work twice as hard to get it. To my Federationists, I want to say one last thing. One of the things I think that we really need to start working on is making ourselves more publicly aware and being out in the public. I feel like we just need to push ourselves individually and as a group. I want you guys to join organizations. I want you to join neighborhood, whatever, neighborhood watches, city councils, emergency preparedness. You know, there's volunteer, Red Cross. There's so much stuff. The more blind people that show up in these places, the more, I mean, this is the time, guys. 20 years ago when we did these walkathons and all this stuff, nobody really cared. But right now, being disabled is kind of like being a rock star. Let's take advantage of it. Let's bring blindness back out to the streets, and let's get these people going. Thank you so much. You guys are awesome. Thank you. Enjoy your convention.